You do the Fittest Family and stuff like that. You sit down for an hour and you watch it. Like, you go to the Jacks, you sit down for a shite and you scroll on TikTok. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. You're kind of a waste of muscle. I feel like a man that muscly should use it. And it's like, you've made a living.
Calvin Klein, if you're watching, you know, I don't mind you doing an odd bit of modeling, you know? You have the odd actual, like, really negative thing in person. Like, I had lads starting on me in nights out and stuff. Like, I've had lads come ask me for a picture, take the picture of me, and then turn around and start giving out to me and ask, who do I think I am? Like, do I think I'm famous or something? And like, they asked me for a photo. It's like, I don't know, what do you want me to do?
I don't think they realise the damage that I might have to certain people. Now, it doesn't to me, but I know a lot of people that it would affect. When it comes into real life, when people are nasty in real life, that's a different kettle of fish altogether.
It's getting better, but there is such a stigma around men's mental health, and it's a thing that men particularly really, you know, struggle with expressing, because like you were saying, you know, you feel like you have to be this big, strong, tough man and you can't have feelings in the way.
Everyone talks about drugs and they talk about cocaine and they talk about heroin and they talk about, but like, the most damaging drug in the country is by far alcohol, like by far.
Welcome along to Under Construction with Chadwicks. I'm Donal Co-Callaghan. Later on, we're going to be chatting to Orla Good from Port West in our Suppliers Corner. But today, we have a right treat. All good tradesmen and women have three common traits: honesty, hardworking, and serious crack. And our guests today are all of the above. We're delighted to be joined by James Doyle. James, how are we getting on?
Happy out.
Yes. And Joe McGuckin. Joe, how are you?
I'm very good. Yeah.
Lads, thanks a million for joining me. Look, I enjoy the pod, right? And it's great chatting to tradesmen and women and learning more about the game. But it's all about having a bit of crack, and there's no better around than the two of yourselves.
I've gotten the odd compliment, you know.
Joe, I might start with you. Of course, we see on Chadwick's social media, and we'll chat about that later on, but how did you get into it? You know what I mean?
I've been making videos and sketches for the internet for a very long time, since before YouTube was a thing, and then YouTube came along, and I had a place to put the sketches, and then that just evolved. I started making comedy sketches for Facebook. We're a comedy group called The Wind Up Merchants. I've done that for like 5 years, and then just acting the bollocks for like me entire life, basically.
Yeah.
And then I started working with different brands, and I went out by myself, and I connected with Chadwicks, and it's interesting the way you meet one person and it just keeps, it's like a domino effect. Yeah. You know? So. Yeah. I'm just rolling with the punches at the minute, like, you know, you know what I mean?
And James, for you, it all kind of lit up over a while for TikTok, like, not taken away, to have 1 million viewers, like an audience of that is incredible, man. You should be so proud.
Yeah, well, look, it's definitely a big achievement, you know. I don't take away from that.
It's a quarter of Ireland.
I always like to put it in perspective by thinking about how many people fit in Croker. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that kind of, like, imagine now, what would it fit in Croker? Like 10, yeah, what's, that would, it, 10, 12 times.
That would be
something.
All of the quarterfinals, all of the semifinals, and the final.
You're
and then maybe a replay.
There won't be a replay. But it is. It's mental, and look, it's absolutely life changing, especially looking back from 2 years ago. Like, entire life has changed. So,
yeah.
Just blessed, you know.
It's mad. You're kind of a waste of muscle. I feel like a man that muscly should use it. And it's like, you've made a living.
Calvin Klein, if you're watching, you know, I don't mind you doing an odd bit of modelling, you know.
But
it's nice to be able to do the gym as well as, you know, turning that into comedy or, you know, presenting and that type of stuff. It's nice to be able to do a little bit of both, you know. Yeah.
Joe, you mentioned it though, as a nation, like, we produce good comedians, you know what I mean? Have you found that the Irish mentality, you know what I mean? Is it a place that helps young comedians along, or would you be better off travelling overseas and finding your way there? Have you found a good support system within the Irish comedy system?
It was a struggle for a long time, like, and it is a struggle for a lot of comedians, especially if they're doing the circuit, you know? And I was at it for a long time before I was able to make a living from it, but if you're just starting out, then it is tough. But I imagine it'd be tough if you went to London or if you went to New York. It's going to be tough no matter where you go. So I think it's good. For me, it was just good to be at home and to be around family and friends and local communities and to have that support network. That's something that you can't get when you go abroad.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You can't really nurture that in a bigger city.
James, you mentioned it there, though, the platform. So you've used TikTok really to launch. And can you just tell us a little bit about that? Like, how's that been for you?
Yeah, like, you know, you think about 10 years back, you know, like, look, I'm living out in Leitrim. For a man to be living out in Leitrim with over a million followers, like, it's something you never see ever. You know what I mean? Like, I was a young fella watching YouTubers back in the day, you know, a few Minecraft YouTubers, you know, that's what I always aspire to be. And, like, I'd be looking at them, like, you know, just they have a million followers and that's mental. Like, I'd never reach that or something. And to actually have it is just bizarre because the internet is such a wild place. You know what I mean? Like, and like only 40% of my following is Irish. You know what I mean? So the fact that there's so many international people, like there's a rake of UK lads and everything that watch me, and it's just, it's so weird to feel like, you know, like Leitrim is so small populated, has like, what, 40,000 people or something? And like 1.2 million people are following me, and that's only on one platform. It's just, it's mental. But like without TikTok, I definitely wouldn't be, you know, where I am today. Like, I don't think TikTok is having opened up an easier way to make content. You know, like, I was always very fearful 10 years ago to make content because you have to put a lot of work in and you had to, like, you know, be grinding out, and then you might be at it for 4 or 5 years before you get a single view. Whereas TikTok allows you to kind of just put out anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's so easy to make content on TikTok. So easy. So you can just put it out there, put it out there, put it out there. And because, like, the For You page, you're never really looking at people who you follow. Like, I'd follow someone on TikTok and I'll never see or hear from them again, you know? So it's just, it is really, it's just an amazing platform. And I was so lucky that it was just great timing for me, you know?
Joe, you've used all the platforms from radio to TV and the stuff with Darren. You know what I mean? It's been great. How do you find social media as a platform, though, like that, like James is saying?
It's interesting because it kind of simplifies things. Like, when I started out, you had to make, and I still do, like, make things of a higher production quality. But now with TikTok and stuff, this, like, it's simplified.
Yeah, okay.
But because it's simplified, it's nearly harder then, because there's no oversaturation or there's an expectation for you to create more content. Whereas before, it was like you put a month of effort into one video.
Yeah.
Or a pilot episode of a TV show. You put a lot of energy into one piece, but now it's you put a lot of energy into lots of pieces.
Yeah.
So it's just a different challenge, and it's just constantly evolving. And it will, like, TikTok is still in its infancy, really, and it will continue to evolve. And so will, like, YouTube has gone to YouTube Shorts. So it's still, it's like Instagram's gone to Reels. So it's just constantly changing and evolving. And it's just a matter of keeping up with it.
Is that because the attention span is, you know what I mean? We all want something instantly. You want to, you know what I mean? You want a quick laugh. So we want you to provide that in my pocket, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. Like, you do the Fitness Family and stuff like that, which is great. You sit down for an hour and you watch it. Like, you go to the Jacks, you sit down for a shite and you scroll on TikTok. Like, you know what I mean? You're on the bus, you scroll on TikTok. Wherever you have the small bits of time, then you just need bite-sized bits of content. Yeah. And that's what a satisfies that need.
Yeah, it's a dopamine kick, like.
100%.
But people are changing. Like, I just looked around there. A few of my buddies called around to watch a match, but everyone was on their phones in ways, doing different things, either watching what other people are saying while watching the same game. You know, it's changing, isn't it?
It's getting worse, like, in terms of an attention span. Like, because TikTok has made it so short form content is so like easily accessible and easily made, there's a shortage now of long form content. Like, I've started making videos longer. Like, I put out 6 to 7 minute long TikToks, which is like unheard of, really. Like, usually the max you're going to get is like 10 seconds. I got a million views in a vlog that's 6.5 minutes long, like. Wow. You know what I mean? So, like, I think the only issue is because people's, like, you know, dopamine receptors are so, like, in constant need of another kick.
Yeah.
It means that making those long form videos is way harder because you constantly need, like, an extra kick within the video. So, like, I like to format my videos, especially long form ones, like, if you ever watch Family Guy, you know?
I'm a big Peter Griffin fan, don't worry. I'm cool with the kids,
too. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Family Guy basically works, or writers trying to aim to have a new joke every 10 to 15 seconds or something, because that's the only the attention span that someone can ask for. Like, most people, especially on TikTok, like, the stats are there. If the video isn't stimulating in 6 seconds, they're gone.
Wow.
They'll go to the next one. 6 seconds. So you have 6 seconds to lock someone into a video. And then every 6 seconds or so, you need to recycle a new reason for them to keep watching.
Yeah.
So the way I format my videos, the long form, is by basically having a new joke every like 10 yeah. seconds or something. So every like voiceover, I'll do voiceovers. Voiceovers, that's why it's so annoying. Like I have that 6 minute video, that took me 2 hours to edit.
Wow.
6 minutes. Now, granted, look, it's like 50 minutes of footage or whatever, but it took me 2 hours to edit just because I have to think of it, the next joke. I have to find a reason for them to keep watching. So you either, at the very start of the video, you're setting up a story for them to follow. And then from that, it's just keeping them involved along in the story, you know?
Can I say on that though? I think genuinely, when it comes to social media content, I don't think people have a genuine understanding of how time consuming it is.
Oh yeah,
they think he can throw that out in no time, and it's so simple. And you giving an example like that just shows the amount of work that goes into it, even when you're that talented at it. Do you yeah. find that a bit?
Yeah, and it's kind of frustrating to yeah. a point. You put a lot of energy into one video and it doesn't do as well, and you get another video where you just film something on the street, you film a bag flying in the sky and it gets like a million views and you're like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah, there's like, no accounting for it. Yeah,
yeah, I'm like, why am I bothering doing this stuff? And that gets the million views. But like it comes down to quality over quantity. And then, you know, there's a lot to be said for both. They're different things. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, they're different things.
How does it go down with friends and family though? You know what I mean? Because try and explain it. Like I'll go back to rugby with me. If people found it was unusual that was your job. You know what I mean? I'm sure you get that a little bit. So what do you do for a living? I create social media content. Yeah, exactly. When are you going to get a real job? Like,
I tell me ma like that I do a podcast and she's like, oh, what station is it on? She hasn't a clue.
My mom, when we were looking for emails, they used to write to each other. My aunt emigrated to Australia in the 80s, but they used to write letters. And then once they said, we'll start emailing, my mom was there, the postman brings the post. But where are these emails? You know what I mean? But that's the generation you're trying to deal with. Do you find that a bit, James, that, you know, people are like, when are you going to cop onto yourself?
Yeah. Like, especially at the start now, the first one, especially even when I stopped working on site or whatever, like, it was such a massive transition. Like, until I started making enough money to, you know, be able to live, like, I'm still living at home, like, or whatever, like, I'm 21, you know. As soon as I was able to make enough money to live off just social media, that's when I stopped working on site. But yeah, I definitely, like, you know, you definitely have a few people thinking, like, geez, this lad's a waste or whatever, like, you know, just focusing on social media. But, like, now, thankfully, my situation is kind of a bit different than others. Like, I was already on, you know, 300,000, 400,000 followers by the time I quit. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, like, I was making sure I cemented in it. But I can definitely understand why people would think, like, geez, that lad has notions. You know, notions are a major factor.
Of course. And it's like the kryptonite to any Irish person. It's like, we'll bring him down a peg.
Oh, I'll bring him down a peg. Yeah, no, honest God, that man has notions. Yeah. It's the same across the world. Like, you go over to England, it should be the same thing. Like, people would be like, just, or what's he at doing social media, you know, full time? Until it works. And then when it works, everyone is like, just, you know, fair play to him.
100%. What you do brilliant, though, lads, is you know your audience. See, like you mentioned working on site, Joe, with all your Chadwick stuff, you know the crack in the van with the lads and the ladies. You know what I mean? You know the crack.
The thing is, I absolutely do not.
No way.
But okay. I think that's where I draw from. Like, I have an assumption of what it's like in the... So I'm absolutely hammering into the stereotypes. And like, I have a song, I've done a song for Chadwick's called like The Man in the Kitchen. And that's a sketch, that's a song about me and how uncomfortable I am whenever a man comes around to the house to like fix something. And I'm like, oh, do I help
so
him?
Can
I give you that hand? Can I?
Tea?
But that is the truth. That's all of us. That exactly happened to me. I saw someone going up on the roof to fix it. And you honestly, they're like, I am useless. Yeah. You know what I mean? You nailed it.
Me radiators were broken over Christmas. We went over New Year's. We went away to Disneyland, Paris, and it was terrible. But that's a different story. And then we came back.
Gone as official sponsors.
And we came back anyway, and the radiators were broken. And I was like, oh, shit. Like, so we had to call. And we were like, who do you call to fix a radiator? Like an electrician or a plumber? And
like, you know that. I feel way better now. You weren't lying when you said you haven't a clue.
I have no clue. So we called out a plumber to fix it. He just turned the knob on it. So over Christmas, because there were so many people in the house, somebody obviously just turned the knob. And it wasn't broken. Well, it was just switched off.
Okay, I'm embarrassed. That's
how bad
it is. I don't even know I'd fancy a go at that.
Yeah, maybe cut that bit from the podcast before you know what I'm saying.
All I can do is shout at it, and if that doesn't fix it, then it's not getting fixed.
Give it a kick or something, you know?
James, you mentioned it though. You worked on site. Yeah. Like, it's obviously an education as well, because you know the crack on site, and there's nothing like it.
Like, I think it's definitely shaped my personality. Now, look, obviously, you know, you have to kind of tone down the crack on site.
Yeah, of course.
Most of the time, it's not very PG, you know? Yeah. But I definitely think without that kind of shaping, like, look, in school and stuff, you do get slagged and everything. But, like, I don't know where the lads on site, like, where they get this humour from. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like being in school, but amplified by 10,000. You know, every joke is always even, like, it pierces you even more. You know what I mean? So, like, you build up such a tolerance to like slagging and stuff. And I think that's why with social media, like, I don't really care if anyone hates me, because when there's lads saying it to your face, you know, like I was called Bosco for a while on site, like as a nickname, you know what I mean? Right. So lads were there, "Oh, Bosco, you go and do that." Like, and I said,
point the inside of your gums.
Yeah. So, it definitely shapes a person. And I look, even being able to do like the odd bit around the house, it's great to have a little bit of experience. Even if, like, look, I was only, most of my work was part time because I was in school and it's in college and stuff, but like, every summer I would have worked consistently. So like, it's really in that period, like every 3 to 4 months where like you're working consistently, that's when you kind of, people start to know you and they can, like, you know, feel more comfortable around you, and then they can slag the shit out of you, you know what I mean? So,
but I think it's an Irish defence system really, isn't it? It builds up a resilience. If you're able to take a slag or see the funny side of something or just look to poke a bit of fun out of it, it leaves us have an honest conversation. Do you find that sometimes that Irish people use it as a bit of a tool to kind of slag each other to keep your feet in the ground and shape you a bit?
Yeah, because it's easier than giving someone a compliment.
That's 100%.
That seems more uncomfortable. Yeah. If someone complimented me, I'd be like, oh,
yeah, no, you're just,
just give me a bit of stick. You know what I mean? I'm just not. But maybe that's just, I don't know if everyone is the same as that, but like, you know, it's definitely an uncomfortable thing to receive a compliment. For most of the people that I know, receiving a compliment is harder than receiving an insult.
It's
a bit of crack as well, because there's nothing really meant by it. If you give someone a bit of stick, like, you know what I mean?
James, how's your life changed since this? You know, like, the one I always go back to, I'll never forget it, Karen Mullen, who does the radio with me. We went to a game, Munster were playing South Africa, and he was chatting to me behind somebody, and they thought they left their phone on because they watch him on social media so much. They went to reach for their phone because they could hear his voice. And then they turned around and they were like, "Wow!" And like, that was a real moment for me to see, like, he exists on their phone. Yeah. He doesn't exist at the match
with them.
You do,
You definitely exist as a person on a phone.
Yeah.
Like, I do have people coming over, like, and like you were saying at the start, like, you know, like, jeez, he's real, you know what I mean now? Yeah. Like, people do come over and they're like, "Oh my God, I didn't know you were actually real." And it's like, I'm not like a fabrication of your mind, you know what I mean? Like it's a whole different thing, especially even like being approached in public. Like, it's a thing that you never really get used to.
Yeah.
Like, look, in Ireland, I do get a bit, obviously, because, you know, I've had a viral trend, which was massive in Ireland, obviously. And then, you know, people would have seen my videos a lot. But like, when I go abroad and I get noticed, it's just mind blowing. Like, I had a lad when I went to Dubai. Now, I was in Dubai a week. I got noticed once, but I tell you now, I was astonished. When a man from Dubai, like, he was no one's from Dubai, you know what I mean? Everyone immigrates to Dubai. Okay. But you get what I mean? Like, he was a young lad from Dubai, and he goes like, are you the protein bar guy? And I, you know what I do? I turn around and I go, F off. I literally scream at him. I shout it like, from
and you're messing with my head.
Yeah, he looks at me like, and I was like, no. Like, how do you know? Like, that is mental. I just couldn't get over it. Like, I had like a full like mental breakdown there. And then it was funny because I was with Jim Flano. He does TikTok as well. And he started recording because he couldn't get over it as well. And then your man, sure, it's illegal to record people in Dubai. And your man was there. Your man was there looking down like this, and then he started panicking because I was like in shock. And then Jim was recording, and I was like, the most awkward experience of my life. But that was surreal, because like, when I go to London and stuff, you get copped a good bit, or people just shout protein bar at you on the street, you know.
Okay.
But it was just like, sometimes it's just absolutely mind-boggling. Yeah, you know,
it goes to show you should never meet your heroes. Imagine the story he's gone back telling his mates, like, met him and he told me to jog on. What about for you, Joe? Do you find that a little bit that people are over familiar with it?
Whenever it happens, I'm always surprised when someone comes up and kind of recognise me. Like, I haven't gotten used to being recognised, even though it's been happening a good bit and for a while as well. And I think that's an interesting story, because it reminded me, before I was solo, you could say, like as Joe McGuckin, I was the wind-up merchants. And we had one sketch, like, I'm talking about 13 years ago. It was the Lewis Driver sketch. I don't know if you ever seen that, like pushing the apple. And it was when he went on strike a long time ago. But I was in Madrid. I proposed to my wife. It was the night that I proposed to my wife. We were in Madrid on a rooftop bar, and this Spanish fella came up to me. And this was like 7 years after that video came out. And he was like, hola, like,
he was like, your Spanish has come on no end.
Baguette.
I kind of went Italian with it as well. I was like, hola.
Just keep going.
But he came up to me and was like, I know you done the Lewis video. And I was like, how do you even know what a Lewis is?
Yeah, amazing.
Let alone know what the video and stuff was. That was very surreal. Yeah. I was looking around for cameras. I was like, who was taking the piss out of
Prank.
Me?
Yeah.
There are the highs of it, but there are lows of it as well. And probably an example for me, I'll never forget halftime in one of our games. One of my teammates was taking his phone, and in the bathroom, he would check what people are saying about his performance on social media.
That's worse
thing,
you know.
Yeah, 100% it. But I think people look for it for, you know, for them to be satisfied that they're going okay a little bit. And it's great to have all the nice bits like that and people being genuine, but it can be tough on social media. How do you handle negative comments or dealing with that side of it?
I have probably, it's about 600 or 700 people blocked on TikTok.
Do you?
I just, as soon as I say them? Anything, and like, wow. I mean anything, they could just call me a gobshite, block. Literally, okay. I have no tolerance for it. Yeah. Sure, the way I see it is like, I'm sure you don't deserve to watch my video. You know what I mean? Do you know how much effort it takes to go onto a comment and talk shite like?
Yeah.
Like, that is a lot. You have to go click like 3 or 4 buttons to get there. Like, I just have no tolerance for it. I just block everyone. But like, it's grand. Like, online, I don't really care because I just deal with it straight away. I don't pay any attention. But like, when you have like a bad encounter in person, like I'll meet and have a conversation with how many people, but then there's always like one in like a million who will just be like, it'd be like the worst interaction ever, or say like, you have a bad day or whatever. Like, I got a comment there, or one of the days was like, oh, my teacher met you in person, he said you were an arsehole or something, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, sure, I could have been hungover or something, or not had the earphones in and I didn't pay attention. That's all they see. They just see you ignoring you know what I mean? And it's not like I do it on purpose. Like, 90% of the people I see, like, I have a chat with. Have the odd actual like really negative thing in person. Like, I had lads starting on me in nights out and stuff. Like, I've had lads come ask me for a picture, take the picture of me, and then turn around and start giving out to me and ask, who do I think I am? Like, do I think I'm famous or something? And it's like, they asked me for a photo. It's like, I don't know, what do you want me to do? Like, I had one very bad experience now on the train. And I literally had PTSD from the train for about 2 or 3 months. I just couldn't get on it because it was packed. It was a Friday evening, right? So a Friday evening coming home from Dublin to the Sligo train, like, and jammers. So I was out beside the toilets. I couldn't get a seat. So I sat on the floor beside the door where you leave, and we were stopped a minute or something. So a woman came over to me now. She, you know, Dublin accent. I won't attempt it because I don't want to offend
her.
She asked, you know, can we go out to have a cigarette or whatever? And I look up, I had the earphones in. I don't know. She looks at me, right? She goes, whips the cap off the top of my head. Right? Now, my hairline is desperate, right? I'm very self-conscious about my hair, and the cap hair is even worse.
Yeah, okay.
I'm blushing. You know? Take on a date first. Anyway, she she takes the cap off my head and shouts down at me, right? You're the protein bar, fella. That's you. You're the protein bar. You're famous.
I had to do it.
And I was looking up. I sat on the floor. I felt like a child. I was like looking up. The entire train just starts staring at me. And me there sat on the ground like a little baby. Like, and I was like, I didn't know what to say. I was just in shock. I was like, and now I could smell the drink off her and the woman beside her. And the woman beside her now was about 50 years of age. I think they're on a hen or something. And your one is like, do you know who that fella is? Do you know him? And like, your one is there. No, like, she didn't. didn't have a clue. And she started poking, go on, tell everyone who you are. Don't mind everyone behind you. Don't mind them. You're famous. Go on, tell her what you do. Tell her what you do. And I was sat there in fear. I was frozen. Like, I just couldn't move. My entire body just went into shock. Like, as I was sat on the ground. Eventually, like, after 10-15 minutes of just, like, plagiarizing me, telling me to say who I am and stuff and talk, she left. I was sat on the floor, put the cap back on, like, sat there. Everyone was staring at me or whatever. And, like, everyone was also in shock. Like, no one was like, well, what a dick, he didn't say yeah. Anton, you know what I mean? Everyone's like, that should not have happened. And then she came back then, 10-15 minutes later. Was that bad of me saying that? Should I apologise to you? They're all giving out to me that I shouldn't have done that. And I was just there, no, you're grand, just please just leave me alone.
Hugging her, please just leave me alone.
I want
alone.
My mammy.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. So that was a rough experience. So
of course, but that is hard to deal with. Have you had moments where you know to put the phone away because...
We talked about it earlier, like people don't realise that you're a real person, you're just a thing on the screen, so it means nothing to them to send a nasty message or leave a nasty comment. So that's why it doesn't really affect me. That, and I don't really care. And, like, you know, I was fucking bullied as a kid and stuff. So yeah. Stranger saying that to me, I'd have no respect for the type of person that would say something like that. So that's another reason why I don't let it bother me. But also, I don't think they realise the damage that I might have to certain people. Now, it doesn't to me, but I know a lot of people that it would affect. But it is when it comes into real life, when people are nasty in real life, that's a different kettle of fish altogether. If somebody comes up and approaches you and wants to engage in a conversation with you, they don't actually have anything to say. Their initial reaction is just to get your attention. It's like, yo, protein bar. And you're like, yeah. And then they're like, yeah. You don't know where to go from there. So a defense mechanism that I have is like instantly ask them about themselves. Yeah. Like, yeah, where are you on the stags? Are you on the hens? Where are you going? And then that gives them something to talk about. Yeah. And then when they have something to talk about, then they're more comfortable because they're very uncomfortable. They're more uncomfortable than you are in that situation.
That's an unbelievable way to look at it though, isn't it? That's you actually being sound, knowing that they're kind of in shock to see you, but they do want to engage. They just...
Yeah.
They haven't got the tools to get themselves across the line and have a good conversation with you.
Because you've been that person yourself. Like.
Oh, I...
Do you know what I mean? You've met, like, you in the world and the industry that you're in, like, I'm sure you meet heroes all the time and you don't know what to say. You're in rooms, you're like, I'd love to go over and talk to you, but what the fuck am I going to say?
Yeah.
There was one I remember during the summer, we were getting ice cream for the kids and someone just came over and, does Davy Fitz know you're having those? And in my head, I'm thinking, I'm getting ice cream from me. Like, how do I, do you want an ice cream? They're all loving, you know, but it's just those awkward moments.
I know. Like he was probably thinking about that for a half an hour. Like,
yeah, he was
saying to his
over,
mates,
yeah.
like, there's fucking Duncan over there. You know?
But that's actually good that you think of that, to be sound to them like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I'd say an awful lot of people think like that. You know what I mean? How can you know what I mean? Throw them a life raft to engage in a conversation if they want to have it.
What you were saying about, like, you know, people going over and they're more awkward than you.
Yeah.
I went to the IFTAs last year, right?
Get
and
up.
I went, yeah, TikTok brought me, and I was like, I was the only person who wasn't like ever on telly there. And like, here was me just like, what is going on? Like, the best way to describe it now, I walk down the stairs into it and I just look over at just a big sea of grey. Yeah. So everyone in the place had grey hair. Like, they're all old. And like, me there in me suit taking the bee's knees. But I tell you,
Cillian Murphy's going to call you out now going, I was over there and there was grey happily, hair for a part.
He can happily call me out. Jesus Christ, I'm the worst man now to start beef with. Do a bit of influencer boxing with Cillian Murphy. But anyway, no, I went in and I was like nervous. I was a nervous wreck. But anyway, I went down, sat, and there was a lot of drank, you know what I mean? I had a few glasses of wine myself. I made it off myself. I was on the red wine, and sure, doesn't it stain your teeth? I had about four or five glasses of it, and my teeth were going around like purple, you know what I mean? I felt like an Oompa Loompa or something. So I ended up seeing Brendan Gleeson. And I said, all right, this is it. Brendan Gleeson is like,
I loved you in Paddington.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, this is
class. I thought you were deadly in Paddington.
Oh, sure, I didn't know what to say. Because, sure, I only watched The Guard like a week before that. You know what I mean? I thought he was actually brilliant in The Guard. But it completely went out of my mind. All I could think of is, what's the Leaving Cert one where he's on the train with the inhaler? Do you know that one?
Oh, Jesus.
Cockamillish.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
All I could think of was Cockamillish. Now, I was out of school 3 years nearly at this stage. Like, so I haven't looked at Cork and Millish in years. Was the only thing I could think of, and I was there, and and they were everyone at the table egging me on. Go on, talk to him. They were thinking, just Cork. No one's going to say that to him. He's international. No one's going to mention Cork and Millish. So I went up and I go. He was in the middle of talking to someone else, right? So I felt even more awkward because I had to like invade into their conversation.
No, you didn't.
So I went over. Me walked over. Fucking not a bother on me, you know, arms swinging, I think McGregor going over, and I go, oh jeez, how's it going, Brendan, how are you, and he goes, oh well, how's it going, and I go, my name's James, shook his hand, whatever, and I go, now Brendan, I'm only a few years out of school doing to leaving, and he cut me off there, right, he cut me off, and he goes, this better not be something about Cork Millish.
Did you not see me in Paddington?
Oh, lad, I tell you now, right? I've been mad, moody. My face went scarlet. I was there. That was my only ammunition. I had nothing. I was a bit tipsy at the point. Yeah. You know, that was the only thing I had. So I was like, no. And it's like, and then I started just licking his hole. Like, I didn't know what else to do. So I was like, just yeah, you're a great actor and you're fantastic and all this. And I was like, jeez, I am some melon. And I go, okay, I'll tell you. And he started laughing now with the maid beside him. And I was like, okay. Geez. Walked away. And I have it. It's all, I didn't record the interaction with it, but someone recorded me going
from
up
a distance. Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, it's most embarrassing. But I talked to Brendan Gleeson. So
yeah, very true.
You and then crawled back to the TikTok table.
I hung my head in shame. They asked me, how did it go? Great. Got his number.
You know?
Well, you imagine the TikTok table is like, you know, Christmas dinner. And then you have a kids' table on the side.
That's exactly it. Having goujons and chips.
Dinosaur nuggets or something, yeah.
But you know, a big area that probably has changed an awful lot is mental health. I just go back to our dressing room. Showing a weakness wasn't acceptable. You know what I mean? But now I look at, if you look at the Netflix documentary at the moment, Andrew Porter within that just saying how there's times he struggle and lads being more vocal to say, I'm a little bit vulnerable. Have you found a shift in that, Joe, for you? Putting your hand up that you're struggling sometimes or you feel like there's better supports around that you can?
Do you know what? It's an interesting thing for me. And I flip-flop on it week to week, do you know what I mean? Because I feel like a lot of the time it is used kind of like as a promotional tool. Okay. Like almost to kind of open up and talk about it. But then on another week, I'd be just like, but it's like, you should be talking about it. Yeah. Even if it is just as a promotional tool, it's still part of who you are and it's still what you're talking about. So I do think it's a positive thing that people are talking about, that mental health and stuff like that. But I don't think talking about it is necessarily enough. Like, I don't think there is any solutions. Like, it's talking about a problem. It's like, look at that big hole in the wall. And they were all like, yeah, no, you're dead right. There is a hole in that wall.
Yeah.
Let's not fix it, though. Like, we're all talking about the problem, which is great.
100%.
But I don't know what's actually being done to fix the hole in the wall.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point because I wouldn't really have felt that I would suffer that little way, but I definitely would have felt in my dressing room I could have been more supportive and I could have helped guys that were probably struggling a little bit. But like that, I didn't know the hole in the wall. I didn't know.
Well, yeah.
I didn't know to kind of go over to you and kind of go, Joe, what's going on? Or just even a process to chat to you in about it. And I think you're right. I think we're all chatting about mental health, but none of us, and you're probably a little bit like me, you wouldn't mind helping more if someone is struggling, but I actually don't know how. You know, everyone says be a shoulder, be supportive, and 100% I'd love to be, but I'd love to know how you can help them a little bit more.
But there's also that like, you're not a psychologist. Like, you're not like, listening is good, listening is important, like, and being supportive is important, but I don't know how much of a impact. Like,
I do agree.
It puts a lot of onus on the people around the person who's suffering.
I agree. It would be great if there were, like, because I remember one time I just went to our team manager, but then he was able to chat to resources to help.
Yeah.
And then I was there, like, that, like, I didn't even know it in the moment, but like that is actually a helpful way of being a decent teammate or friend, like at least channeling it towards a productive process or outcome at the end of it.
Yeah.
James, what about for you mental health wise?
Yeah, I think mental health would have been something I really struggle with now as a young fella. Like going up, going through school and stuff, I really did struggle, especially with like, I had eating disorders growing up and I really suffered with looking at myself in the mirror. You know what I mean? Like I genuinely, like I remember being in like maybe TY or 50 or something, going up to the mirror in the bathroom and grabbing onto like a piece of fat and me love handles or whatever and just being like, just I wish I could cut it off or something. You know what I mean? Like I really did struggle through it and I was never really happy with my body my entire way growing up. And thankfully like the gym is what saved me in a sense. You know what I mean? Like I was big into the rugby and everything and sure, the eating disorders meant I had no energy. I'd wake up for school, eat nothing in school, go train, then come home and have a bowl of rice for dinner.
Yeah,
and like that's it, and then I go to bed, do the same thing again. So I had no energy. I was like fucking skin and bone, you know what I mean? And it just it killed off a lot of my love for sports and stuff. So, and I think the reason why that happened is because like there's such it's getting better, but there is such a stigma around men's mental health, and it's a thing that men particularly really, you know, struggle with expressing, because like you were saying, you know, you feel like you have to be this big strong tough man and you can't have feelings in the way. And I think the way social media is going is good in a sense, because I know even look, body dysmorphia in particular is something I struggle with. And I remember growing up and like, you know, people on juice, like on steroids and stuff, and they'd be faking it, saying they're natural and stuff. And you're like, why don't I look like that? You know what I mean? I do my 5 sit-ups in the room at night. You know what I mean? Like I was one of those kids doing the push-ups in the bedroom and like, why aren't I this or whatever? You know what I mean? And sure, I wasn't eating. There was no thought behind it. But even in terms of influencing stuff, I think authentic content is really taking a step in the right direction. It's less of like, you know, the acting as an influencer. Like I completely break against all aspects of an influencer. You know, you think of influencers as these lads in Love Island, you know, ripped to pieces and stuff. I'm just some bogger from Leitrim who, you know, decided one day I'm going to start going to the gym. I'm going to start making some videos. So these videos are doing well. I'm going to start, you know, traveling. I'm going to start documenting my life and stuff. And I like to be authentic because it's the way that there's no one there. As a young fella, I remember looking at like any influence online and stuff, and there was never anyone to kind of look at and be like, they're real people. Like you're saying, it's looking in a screen, but I think the internet is getting better at showing authenticity, you know?
But that's why people follow you, because that is realistic, that is honest, that's the truth, isn't it? Yeah. Because like I'm new to social media myself, but I look through it and like from having a rugby mind or training an awful lot, you're just there, cheat. Like, and you're there, they're fake. You know what I mean? You can tell it straight away once you know.
Oh yeah, you know, once you know it's fine, but like as a
kid,
14, 15 year old, you're just consuming whatever you see and you don't, you know, you don't really know what you're looking at. And I think that's the issue. Like, look, this is a controversial enough opinion, but even like drinking culture in Ireland, I think is terrible. You know what I mean? Like you're basically, it's propaganda to be like, oh, it's better to go out on the lash every weekend or even every day, like instead of, you know, focus on something that really matters. Like, and I think it's too normalized, especially like across Ireland.
I'm with you. Yeah. Like I feel sarcastic saying that I'm a non-drinker, but it does embarrass me every time we bring someone to Ireland that the first thing we do is stick a pint in their hand and then they're, could we not have brought them to the cliffs of Moher, or can we not sell our beautiful country and be known for that as opposed to nearly hold ourselves back with a little bit of it.
Yeah, like drink is definitely, like look, I have the odd drink, I'll be happy to say it, you know, but it's like you're basically brainwashed as a young fella to think like, you know, drinking's cool, drinking's all this, you know, if you're not cool, if you're not drinking, you're not cool. Like I remember going to teen discos as like a 15-year-old and because I wasn't drinking, I was a loser. You know what I mean? Like, so like there's a lot of pressure there, and I think that in particular is not great, because even then from a mental health point of view, if you're having a drink even on a Saturday, you're going to constantly be like, you know, looking for that next big dopamine hit on the next Saturday, and that's what you're living for. You're working through the week just to get to your next drink, you know what I mean? And I think it is kind of indoctrinated, so that in particular is,
do you mind me asking, how did you seek help? What did you do? Is there a moment that you realised, I need to change the way I think about myself here?
I know as a young fella, like I used to every chance I got, you know, to go on the lash or something, I would. Like every Saturday, I'd just go and get blackout drunk. That's what I thought the whole point of it was, like to go blackout and not understand what was going on, you know. And then like I kept doing that. And I was like, I don't remember anything from the last, I don't remember anything from that Saturday. I done nothing all of Sunday because I was hungover. And like, I kept doing that for years on end. Then in college, you're doing the exact same. You're going out and you're getting blackout, except you're doing it 3 or 4 times a week. Like, and then it was really just a TikTok because it's like, okay, well, I need to actually know what I'm doing here because I have a personality, you know, like I am a personality or whatever. So like, I've really tried limiting, especially in the last like year or so, to stop going out as much. I'll still go out, I'll still drink a bit, but like I'll only on a special occasion, like I'll try now go on actual nights out and not drink.
Because I know myself, if I need to kind of start feeling good about myself, training in some format, yeah, moving my body, getting out, like it's funny, Jenny, my wife, would go to me, she'll notice I'm a little bit spiky and she's there, do you want to go train? And I will come back with all that buzz.
Well, you feel better.
Yeah, no, it's, 100%. Have you found
yeah.
that?
Yeah, no, like the gym, like it's better to put your energy into that, and like, sure, that regulates your sleep then if you're actually doing something during the day. Like, look, our job is not very labor intensive, so it's, you know, you're not doing a whole lot during the day, so like at least when you go to the gym and stuff, you're using all that excess energy, so you're regulating your sleep so you feel better the next day. Yeah. Then you'll be able to clear your mind by like, I'm doing weightlifting, whatever, yeah, if you're running or whatever, like it's just, it's a way to put your energy into something else that's not toxic for yourself, you know.
Yeah. What about you, Joe? Do you get that buzz from training?
Oh, no, we'll get it from the points.
No, it's all arm curls.
I think it's very interesting. I'm actually currently exploring it a little bit, like the relationship I have. My dad was, he's passed now, but he was an alcoholic and he was recovered. He was recovered for a good few years before he passed. The alcoholic attitude would be so normalised, and the behaviour of people would be excused. The bad behaviour of people would be excused because they were drinking. Addy had a few drinks, like, you know what I mean? And it's only now that I'm kind of exploring that, and I'm realising that people's relationships with alcohol is very, it's very bizarre. It's very, very bizarre. In particular, I can only speak from my experience. Like, you know, I don't know what it's like in the country, but where I'm from, like, it's so...
No, I'd agree.
It's weird. Like, yeah. It's really weird. I've written a short film from the perspective of a child who's being neglected by his mother, and then like I go, it just takes place in the space of a day, but you just see the impact that, because it's, everyone talks about drugs and they talk about cocaine and they talk about heroin and they talk about, but like the most damaging drug in the country is by far alcohol, like by far, like if you think of the drink driving deaths, if you think of just people falling drunk, you think of the fights when people are drunk. Yeah. You think of all of this stuff. And like, if they don't die, then just the damage that it's doing to their bodies, to their mental health, to everything. Like, I've had to relearn my relationship with alcohol. And I'm still on a journey where I'm trying to say, hang on, that's not normal behavior. And it's not this kind of open bar attitude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's an open bar. You need to fucking go to town on that thing.
Especially in events and stuff. I say, like, you get free, like, with our work, you get a lot of free drink given to you, and you kind of have to just be like, why would I be drinking this? Like, there's no need for me to, am I drinking it to get drunk? Why am I getting drunk? Like, do you know what I mean? There's no reason there. Like, look, don't get me wrong, I love a creamy pint of Guinness. You know what I mean? I love it, but it is just knowing what you're going into when you are drinking, like why, what's the purpose for you drinking?
Exactly.
Yeah. Joe, it's a good way to document it as well for you though, that you're also using it towards your creative side. You know what I mean? Yeah. Do you think that'll help you understand it more?
Absolutely, yeah. Like I've been on a bit of a journey, like it was very damaging to my relationship with my wife, and we've gone through it together to kind of figure out like what's going on there with the alcohol, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be of the belief that it's a genetic thing. I believed my dad was an alcoholic. He passed it on to me. Oh, that's what he believed. But I don't, and I believed that. But then I realised, I think it's just a relationship thing. It's an association thing. And recognising that really helps. And it's kind of changed my view on alcohol and drinking and events, like where, it's self-regulation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's known.
So controlling yourself.
Yeah, it's controlling yourself. Yeah, like, I'm going to have 4 points.
Discipline.
I'm going to have. Yeah. Like, it's an open bar. It doesn't mean you have to
You don't have to open the entire bar, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Bringing me back to Tommy Boney's first cab, finding out there was a free bar and walking back with like 25 black Russians. They were there, Tommy, the bar's free all night, just relax, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's interesting and we look forward to seeing it and the best of luck with that, you know, because I think there's an awful lot of people that are like you, like me, want to know, like us all, want to know more about all that.
Yeah.
And when
it's
coming from someone like you, you know, it carries an awful lot of weight. Tell me, and I don't mean to go off it, but just another topic I'm interested in, because I always feel it, and I see it with some of my buddies, the pressure to put out content and the pressure to be creative all the time.
It's, I struggled with it a lot. I had my worst month ever in December.
Okay.
The entire month of December, I don't know whether it was the holiday blues or whatever, as well as like I was doing nothing. Like I post like 3 times a day, minimum most of the time. Like, look, it's very, very rare. I've not posted like 7 or 8 days since I started. Like, and that's what, 600 days, like, you know what I mean? So 7 out of 600, I haven't posted a single video, is a lot. But then even like, on them single days, like I posted one video, but because December was so poor for just, I couldn't think of anything. It was just such a struggle to try and pick anything from what I was doing in the day. Like just like one video, it actually done really well, but it was like, it was me putting out the bins. And I made a video about it. And like it got like 2 million views or whatever, but that was like an anomaly. That's like me jumping, oh, look at me, I jump on bins. This is such an Irish thing to do. And I made a video about it. Like it's just trying to grab for anything. And because that one video paid off, that's grand, but 90% of those videos are absolute dirt. One cares. So it is, I do really struggle with like coming up with ideas and stuff and trying to stay fresh. Whereas it's second week in January, I got like 40 million views in a week. So I was in Morocco. So I had content from every single sort. I had too much content. So if I'm given like a stimulus to make content, it's really easy, but I do really struggle sometimes. And then sometimes even when I do have content, like I could make, I just can't think of anything. You know, some days you just, you're on a downer and you just can't think of anything. And then I'm like, just, I need to post, because especially with TikTok, you know how you're saying you need to be putting out more and more content.
Yeah.
I feel obliged to keep putting out content. Like I hear some content creators taking breaks. You can't do that on TikTok, not anymore.
You say obliged, but like the algorithm, otherwise you pay the price, don't you?
Yeah.
Like you're pushed down.
Oh, 100%. They forget about you. Like the internet is so fast moving in 2024 that if you take your foot off the brake or foot off the accelerator for 1 minute, you may as well take it off for, you know, 3 months.
Joe, what about that for you, the pressure?
That's a different ballgame. Like, there's definitely a pressure, because if you take your foot off the accelerator, there's a fear of just becoming
irrelevant.
Like, irrelevant. Yeah, yeah. Like people will forget, you think in your head, people will forget about you. You know what I mean? And they don't care. You're just like a piece of content to them. You know what I mean? They won't miss you. They won't be like, I miss Joe. Where's Joe's content? They don't give a shit. Like, you know what I mean? They'll fill the gap with something else, and the algorithm that doesn't care. It'll just fill, you know, and then, so you just, there's a fear that you're just damaging your own brand. Like, you know what I mean? If you're not posting, then you're missing out. Now, I've been fortunate because I have the podcast and that kind of keeps me sustained throughout the year, and then with Chadwick's videos and stuff. But from a creative standpoint, like the only content I want to make is content I want to see. That's what started me off in the first place. Like I was looking at the sketches and the sketch shows on RTE back in the day, like the Savage Oi and Republic of Telly. Like, and I wanted to be on it. I was like, and I'd be messaging them, I'd be emailing them and stuff, and I wouldn't get a break. And I'd be like, do you know what? I'll just fucking make my own sketches then, and because I just made what I wanted to see. But now it's who are you making that content for? Are you making it for yourself, or are you making it for the algorithm? Yeah. So it's changed the kind of the perspective on the content that you're making, and you're posting shit that you don't even like.
Yeah.
And it's like really weird when you put it out. It's kind of weird feeling.
Yeah. Like I know exactly where you're coming from. Like when I get an ad or something, there's obviously a monetary incentive there. You know what I mean? Like whereas on TikTok, you don't get paid from TikTok views. Like if I got paid from TikTok views, I'd be making probably like 20 grand a month and they don't get anything.
Yeah.
Whereas when I put out an ad, I actually take my time in it and I'll spend like all day recording an ad using professional equipment and stuff, because there's actually a reason to do it. Whereas I don't feel like there's a reason other than like, that's going to get views anyway. Like I might as well just put up shite. Like if it's an ad, I'm like, I want to put effort into this to make it the best that I can. And that's content. I spend a lot of time doing my ads because it's something I'm really passionate about, creating content. Like I know where you're coming from. I love doing sketches and stuff, and I do the odd sketch, but like I'm after spending 2 hours doing a sketch for it to get half the views of me doing a little thirst trap. You know what I mean? Why, like, genuinely, it's like, why would you
bother? I can't do the thirst traps, you see. You know what I mean?
Ah, that's for other reasons. No.
Joe, I know you're a big rugby fan. Tell me your journey with rugby. I did enjoy it on The Player. It was great stuff. Did you enjoy playing?
I mean, no.
Does, no one does.
Does anyone? Yeah, I was going to say, does anyone
backs
enjoy
do,
playing?
Wingers do.
Not when you're a flanker and you're like just shitting bricks the entire time.
100% it.
I feel like you're just making up words and you're just like backs and flankers and I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, the flanges, man. The flanges are...
It was good you did it though. Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed doing it, yeah. And I genuinely knew nothing about the sport and I still know very little, but I know a little bit more than I did.
Do you know what? I think you're better off. James, would you agree? The more you know, the more flawed it is. You're better off knowing very little and just knowing they need to
ball,
give it their
run.
That's hard. Yeah.
I had questions about it and I was asking people the questions.
Yeah.
And I thought they were basic questions, and if you know anything about rugby, then they'll have an answer. But like you'd be like, so why did he do that? They just did.
This is the, this
your man
the,
waved the flag or something.
A few weeks ago, someone stood in someone's head, and honestly, it is split down the middle with people kind of going, I think that's a bit harsh. And you're there like, hey, here's a problem we have in our game think 50% of people think the game's gone soft. And you're there, no, it's not. We're trying to protect people. So I think you got a good view of it, that coming away from it, that you could just enjoy it and look at it. And use it for pure sport.
Yeah, it was interesting. And it was before the World Cup, so it gave me a lot more interest in the World Cup. But you know, it just gave me hope and something that I'm just going to be disappointed in again.
Like, there you go. Sake, that's like, the Irish rugby team for you. Sorry about that.
Yeah,
it's the Irish every team.
No, we'll get there. We'll get there. Tell us, lads, ambitions. What are the ambitions? If we were to have this chat in 5 years, where would you like to see yourselves? How would have liked to have grown? You know, even just areas that you can, you know, we chatted to Owen O'Riordan before. It is tough on some platforms and social media to, you know, create incomes and stuff like that. But where would you see yourselves maybe 5 years along the way?
Well, personally, now I'll see myself on telly. It's not a maybe, you know, I'll be there presenting a show. But at the moment, my direction is definitely steering away from social media. As much as I love making content, I'll continue to do content, but I'd like to make it into a kind of a here's me behind the scenes sort of a thing, rather than this is me, this is all I do. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be seen as the guy who makes TikTok videos for the rest of my life. I want to be on telly. I want to be a household name and stuff. And look, it's grand having all the 15-year-olds in the country knowing who you are, but like you need to expand yourself beyond that. So I'm really, really planning now at the moment to just getting the foot in the door. I've done a bit of work with the RT Player and stuff, and that's taken off very well across social media and everything.
The ick factor, tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, so me and Shanice we're doing it. I got asked, my agent said, do you want to do a show for the RT Player? I was like, yeah, definitely, 100%, because that's my main focus, is just getting in. And we met up there in the RT studio or whatever, down the road from RT, and it was class. Like, it was great crack, you know what I mean? Like, we were just, here's your briefs, there you go, here's a bit of a script, and read it out and then give your opinions. And we were like, this is brilliant, I love giving me opinion, especially where no one asked for it, you know what I mean? Like, because my relationship experience before that was very minimal. I mean, I'm seeing a girl now at the moment, which is going well. I'm blushing, you know.
Well done for turning it into 2 10-year-olds having a chat.
Do you love her?
Stop.
Shalom.
I punch him for you?
K-I-S-S-I-N-G. So anyway, I didn't really know what I was doing, but she's like, look, I'm great at bullshit. I've bullshit my way through my entire life. You know what I mean?
It's
like,
a great goal to have. That's where you want to be.
Yeah. Like, I've always had the gift of the gab, so I've used that my entire life. I said, this is perfect for me. I want to get into presenting. Like, look, the way I see it, I want to do presenting. It's a big thing I want to do, but like, just if I was asked to be Iron Man in the Marvel movie, I'd be there like
there
that.
You know what
I mean? I will do anything. Like, look, that Dance with the Stars now, you know, next year, I've about 2 left feet, you know what I mean?
But they can always improve.
But I can, I go for it. I 100% go for it. I will do anything that is whatever gets me to the next step or whatever. And I think I just love to have a bit of crack. Like, I love to sit, I love to talk and have a bit of crack. So,
what about for you, Joe? Where do you see yourself for
I take things year to year. So with the podcast, like, I want to do more live shows. I want to move into, I want to do maybe an independent stand-up show. And then I have this short film in the works. I have the bones of a feature film, but that's, wow. I feel like it's too early to even think about that as a, but that's like a 2026 dream or something, a 2025 dream. But yeah, a little bit more acting, a little bit more writing. Keep making sketches and just growing, doing what I'm doing and sort of rolling with the punches. That's kind of been my MO. Like, you don't know what's going to come up. No. You get a bleeding email tomorrow and then you never know where it'll lead. And
that's
and
it though. It isn't it being that like I can't find a better word for it, but kind of fluid. Being able to bounce and be ready.
Yeah.
Lads, thanks a million for the chat. A great chat. Really enjoyed it. Wish you continued success wherever you're looking to go. Looking forward to getting to the cinema to watch your feature long movie. Can't wait to watch you presenting The Late Late.
Yeah.
It should be great times ahead. But thanks a million for chatting with us.
Thank you.
Under Construction, lads. Great chat.
Thanks.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Under Construction. It is time for our Supplier's Corner. And joining Patrick and myself is Orla Good from Port West. Orla, how are you?
Not too bad. Thanks a million for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. It's a great story. It's a brilliant Irish story. You just might tell us a little bit about your brand and a bit about Port West.
Absolutely. Port West is actually celebrating 120 years this year.
Wow.
So we're a fourth generation family business company specializing in workwear and safety wear. So everything from top to toe to help keep the tradesman and worker safe. So we started off as a drapery store in Westport. That store is still there today. It was founded by my great granduncle, Charles Hughes. So I'm part of the fourth generation in the business. So it's still an active family business, but manufacturing focused mainly on workwear and safety wear, yes. So it's really been there all along through every generation. Workwear has just modernized over time. And really, it's gone from shirts and boots. And you hear of blue collar workers, that comes from what they used to wear, essentially. It was a lot of blue coveralls, blue shirts. And then moving
boiler
on from that, boiler suits exactly. And then moving on from that, when you see what is here today and what, you know, tradesmen wear and laborers wear, it's very fashionable, very modern.
But it has gone. It's gone full circle now, isn't it? It's ultra trendy. I've even a few friends that aren't in, but they have your gear purely to be, you know, in the cool gear. And it's kind of gone full circle as opposed to necessity and needing it and being good at your job. It's your cape that you want to be in.
Absolutely. And it's trying to get a balance of the fashion piece, comfort, durability and safety in one. Mm. So we have a team of over 45 product managers between Port West and Base. And their sole focus is looking at how do we make their job more comfortable, as safe as possible, but also as well that they could leave work and not look like they're in work gear as well. Yeah. So that's a big focus in what we do.
I've been lucky enough to be on a few tours, but the Welsh lads always had a saying about look good, play good. So they were convinced if the gear looked the part and they felt good, they could be better at their jobs. And it's pretty much the same in every industry, isn't it?
Yeah. And if you look good and feel good, you're also probably going to be more compliant as well, because then you're not embarrassed about wearing the high visibility jacket or, you know, the trousers with knee pads or even the footwear now. You know, you can see base protection that looks like a normal trainer, but actually it's a safety product. So it's about making sure compliance as well is kept on site. And by doing that, it's making sure that everybody is comfortable in what they wear.
My teammate, Carl Mullen, on 2FM Breakfast, always comes in a pair of men. And like, you're a DJ. Yeah. Who are you calling?
But they're built to last. Because if you think of someone working, they're on their feet all day, you know, going down onto their knees, back up again. There's a lot of movement, twisting and turning that a desk worker or someone in an office doesn't do. So there's actually a lot more to think about when you design workwear, you know. Having the flexibility in the parts that need stretch, but then having durable fabrics where there's a lot of abrasion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really important.
And the pockets where you need them, or the clips that hold the tool or whatever it is. It's fantastic.
But even like that, for example, the latest talking point within the development team is all about harnesses. So there's a lot more use of harnesses, say, on building sites, but also with this whole renewable energies, there's a lot more at height need for working. And simple things like the pocketing. Positioning of the pocketing to make sure that even when they've put all their gear on and their harness, they're still able to access what's inside the pockets. So that's
mainly the mobile phone, just saying.
But even like that, mobile phones have changed so much. So every time we develop a product where there's a mobile phone pocket, we have to make sure that pocket is updated to fit the new phones as well.
Around in it. On, Orly, you're thinking of the safety processes in place before, to incorporate with all the design, is it? It's paramount to the whole process, is it safety?
Absolutely, yeah. Because at the end of the day, the products that we make help protect workers in one form or another, whether it's high visibility, that's to help prevent an accident where a worker is not seen. Flame retardant or multi-standard is, for higher risk environments. Safe, even the simplest thing of safety footwear, it only takes a moment for a brick to fall on someone's foot. Yeah. That worker could be out of work then for minimum 6 weeks if something happens like that. So you have to think of it. Even little things in the design of our garments, like anti-snagging, making sure that there's not extra flaps or tags hanging out that could catch in machinery. Yeah. All of these things have to be thought about at the point of design.
I think one of the evolutions I've certainly seen in my time is, amongst our colleagues, is the accommodation of female colleagues, because it was such a male-dominated industry. And I know even the guys working and girls working in our branches, the girls said, does it have to be uncomfortable for us to wear it? And you guys have come streets ahead in that space, not just in the boots and shoes, but in the overall gear.
Absolutely. And fit is part of the whole safety piece, because if you're wearing trousers that are too wide with gaping legs, that's where the whole machinery you can catch in it. Of course, fit is so important, and for women. I think there are a lot more women, especially in engineering roles and STEM. There's been a huge amount of promotion in the last number of decades. And from that, we've noticed a lot more demand for women's wear. So we have workwear for women's wear, F4, so flame retardant garments for women, footwear, of course, health and hygiene as well. But there's a wide variety now. And the key is not, we've heard the term before, don't pink it and shrink it. It's about having the same look and feel, the same uniform, but just a different fit, a women's fit, essentially. So for example, today, I don't think the cameras can see it, but I'm wearing black work trousers that are specifically for women. We also do a women's work legging.
Okay.
So leggings, which is now a trend, where we've got, they're strong fabric leggings, but they have got reinforced knees and a reinforced back. So it just helps for abrasion, essentially, for women that prefer to wear leggings. Just like we have then a men's tracksuit with the same type of reinforcement.
But if you're going to wear it and you're comfortable, it's like we said earlier on.
But it goes even bigger than that. As an industry, we're always talking about diversity and trying to encourage more female participants in the industry. The only way you're going to do that is to create the environment.
Yeah.
And one way is to provide, clothing that's comfortable, specific for women.
Absolutely.
So well done.
We've been chatting to our suppliers. What are the trends, Orla? What's coming down the track? What's ahead of the game? Give us a bit of insight. My nose is at me, Patrick. Give me a head of Karen Mullen and my fashion stakes.
I think stretch is here to stay. Stretch has been a big word in the workwear industry now for the last four to 6 years. And we're seeing it now more and more. But it's how stretch is used. I think durability is massive, and that's linking to the words that I think probably a lot of suppliers are using, which is sustainability. And of course, the garment industry as a whole is a challenging industry when it comes to this topic. But we've looked at a whole program and really invested in how can we contribute in this big journey and world of sustainability. And the more you learn, the more you realize there's a lot to do. But something as simple as testing, wash testing and wash care can make a garment last a lot longer. Looking at abrasion testing, so we have some fabrics where we've tested it to a million rubs. So it goes on a machine and the machine just goes in circles. And so it'll be like, hitting against,
no bother.
Hitting against walls. Do you know, we should have given it to yourself, yeah, there and some of the rugby players to test out, exactly.
What are you doing? I'm rubbing this for an hour.
But, you know, I guess it mimics like hitting against walls or, you know, leaning against different things. Yeah. We, like, for example, we've it coming out in the next few months. First here, you're hearing about
it. Oh, here we go. Exclusive. Cover your ears for this. You're not ready.
But our next collection, say, that we're bringing out is all about harsh environments. So layering of products, you know, having your base layer, your mid layer, your outer layer. Things like ergonomics. So we've a construction in our garments called ActiReach that when you're reaching upwards, which a lot of workers do, the body of the garment doesn't follow the arms.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It stays
yeah.
down. And that's all to do with looking at how the garment is constructed. Things like pocketing, harnesses, all of these things are trends that we're seeing.
I see some countries have dedicated end-of-life channels for workwear. Like boots and the gear. Do you see that happening here? Is that something that Port West would think about? Or
absolutely. We have actually been thinking about it. We've been in contact with recyclers in the UK, in the Netherlands. I know in some of the shops in the west of Ireland, they've already been doing a giving back program. They have bins in the shops. It's a complex system. And really at the moment, to be fully recyclable, especially when it's workwear and you'd have oil involved and other harsher materials like paints and things like that.
How do you separate them out?
So we've done a lot of research on this. So we did bring out this year three products, knitwear products, so a polo, a t-shirt and a sweatshirt that are recyclable. So there's very few trims on it, very little sewing. It's one material. It's just purely cotton. And at the moment, from what I can see with the infrastructure and from all the research we've done, that is as recyclable as you can go in circularity. And between looking and constantly seeing where can we improve that infrastructure, we're constantly in contact with waste management companies to see how we can contribute to that. But it's the durability piece that today is the most realistic. And looking at your wash label and looking at how many times you can wash your garment is a really good start.
So in terms of footwear, what else is happening in that space? Is there anything new for you guys?
Yeah, just before COVID in March 2020, we acquired a fantastic workwear brand called Base Protection. And their company tagline is "Feel the comfort." So they live and breathe comfort. And if you think of a car, you know, what is the one thing that you look after in your car? It's your tires, because it's the only thing that connects the car to the ground. Yeah. You know, the most underrated piece of equipment on a worker is their shoes. It's the only thing that connects them to the ground. So looking at your shoes and investing in a good pair of shoes is really important. And having comfort is number one. So they look at everything from having their insoles breathable. So it's like an air conditioning. When you push your heel down, it pushes the air in. And when you push on your toe, it pushes the old air out. Or even things like they have innovations in terms of even, you know, nail penetration, flexibility in the midsole. They're even looking at your pronation, whether you lean in or you lean out, and fixing all of this. Because a lot of workers are on their feet all day. And the more tired your feet get, the less effective you are. So make sure that you look for comfort. I think it's so important in footwear and foot protection.
Do those ones come with studs? Could you scrummage in them? They sound incredible.
I'm sure we can sort something out for you.
Orla, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your story, the story of Port West and all the innovations you have. It's been a real pleasure having a chat with you. So continued success to you and the team.
Yeah, thank you very much. And for anyone interested in finding out more, visit portwest.com.
There you go, portwest.com.
Or Chadwicks.
Brilliant.
Thanks so much.
Good on you, Orla. Well done. Thank you.